supporter by an Antifa protester in Portland, Oregon, during a Black Lives Matter demonstration in August 2020 is the lone example of a lethal attack by that left-wing group or other anti-fascists over the past 25 years. Of the 450 murders by political extremists during the last decade, approximately 4% of them were committed by left-wing groups and about 75% by right-wing, white supremacist, anti-government ones. So, what are Americans to do? As a start, given where the Trumpist movement and much of the Republican Party seems to be heading, Americans really need to do something, almost anything. As Michigan Secretary of State Jacqueline Benson, a Democrat, pointed out, facing the growing crisis on the right, I have seen no significant increase in support from national party leaders than what we experienced in 2018 when party vigilance was significant enough, but not nearly what was needed, unquote. A headline of an article in the satirical online newspaper The Onion caught the mood of the moment among progressives. Left-wing group to disorganize for FBI agents to infiltrate. In it, a fictional FBI agent says, "These people don't ever do anything violent. They don't ever do anything at all." Recently, a local Democratic candidate in Maryland knocked on doors seeking name and contact information as a possible volunteer for his campaign. It turned out, however, he wasn't even carrying a pen or paper. Ironically, one government institution that has at least made a nod toward countering right-wing violence is the U.S. military. Since the January 6 attacks, the Department of Defense under Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin has acknowledged an increase in domestic extremist violence carried out by active duty or reserve service members. In response, he initiated a multi-pronged strategy to screen new recruits, educate military personnel about extremism, and begin investigating extremist activity within the ranks. As partisan rhetoric heats up in the United States, progressives are guilty of focusing too hard on the most politicized identity issues, however valuable or even whatever. Asini behavior ignites behaviors and airwaves at a given moment, be it Trump's QAnon-style conspiracy mongering or ex-New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's groping. The problem is that as the Trumpists ramp up their anger, if progressives don't find a unifying message of community and love and find it soon, the guns already out there may be put to use in unspeakable ways. Progressives would do well to step back and think about the genuine big tent issues, like how to show everyone from white suburban women to rural farmers to black single parents that they have so much to lose in life if Americans don't have a government willing to continue regulating healthcare and doing so in a far better fashion. They would gain so much if, in this all too angry country of Americans, they could focus their attention on the importance of childcare for every family who needs it. Above all, if they could focus in an intense way on the ever more dangerous world they're living in, that would be a positive. Whether or not they agree on what's causing global warming, it's hard not to agree right now that they're living in an ever hotter, ever more drought-stricken, ever more extreme America. Why can't agree that it's already damn hot and the summer's just beginning?
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره، همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: يا ابن آدم، كن وصي نفسك في مالك، واعمل فيه ما تؤثر أن يعمل فيه من بعدك.
Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salam, said, O son of Adam, be your own representative in the matter of your property, and do about it whatever you want to be done with it after your death.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Dear friends, we find that one of the things which is a little bit hidden regarding the life and the universal persona of Imam Ali is the fact that he was wealthy. Now, the reason that this fact seems to be hidden from many people is because we tend to focus primarily upon the fact that Imam Ali's clothes were patched, Imam Ali's sandals were torn, and there weren't that many luxuries, if any at all, in the house. But this does not mean that Imam Ali alayhi salam was not wealthy. In reality, Imam Ali gave his wealth on the path of Allah for the sake of Allah.
And so this is the perfect example of one who has been able to acquire wealth, but then gives it upon the path of Allah. And on the other hand, we have individuals who, rather than spending from what they have on the path of Allah, they decide to amass wealth, especially to the detriment of others. But even if it wasn't a detriment to others, amassing wealth is something which is looked down upon. Imam Ali says that those who amass wealth are dead, even though they may be living, while those endowed with knowledge will remain as long as the world lives. Their bodies are not available, but their figures exist in the hearts. In such an amazing way, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that if you amass wealth, you are considered to be dead. Why do you continue to amass wealth? And why is this idea of the dead here being referred to? Well, the people that are alive do not receive any kind of benefit from someone who is dead. And likewise, one who amasses wealth, the people that are around him, they do not receive any kind of benefit. And so, yes, one who amasses wealth is considered to be dead. But who are the ones that are considered to be living, and they are considered to be living as long as the world lives? They are those who have been endowed with knowledge. And even though their bodies are not available, their figures exist in the hearts. One such example, dear friends, is the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, who, despite his body not being available, and not just his body and physical presence is not available, for thousands of years, but we find that he lives in the hearts of every single believer. And as long as the world lives, the knowledge endowed by Allah to Imam Ali alayhi salam will live just as long. A very beautiful, interesting lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين إليك.
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits his supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being, come from thee, like a rainfall. And in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Whilst inside the shrine of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, the visitor is recommended to busy themselves and engage with the remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whether it's through the recitation of the Quran or through a number of important supplications, invocations and ziyaras that indeed establish this connection to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through the remembrance of the Ahlul Bayt. Here, for example, we are in the sahan, or the courtyard, so to speak, of Sayyida Fatima within the shrine of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. And a visitor here is recommended to recite a number of supplications and ziyaras. One could recite Dua al-Sabah, the supplication for the morning from Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, or Ziyarat Ashura, Ziyarat Warith, Ziyarat al-Jami' al-Kabira, Hadith al-Kisa', Dua Kumail ibn Ziyad, Dua al-Nudba, Dua al-Samat, Dua al-Tawassul, the Munajat of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. This and many other supplications are highly recommended. But of course, one of the most crucial is one that is referred to as Ziyarat Aminullah. And the Ziyarah continues until the dua begins. Allahumma inna qulubal mukhbitina ilayka waliha. O Allah, the heart of a mukhbit is yearning towards you. Now a mukhbit is somebody whose heart trembles when they remember Allah. It is a state of humility and tawadhu and khushu'. وبشر المخبتين, the Quran says. وسبل الراغبين إليك شارعة. That the way of those who seek you are established. وَعْلَامَ الْقَاصِدِينَ إِلَيْكَ وَاضِحَةً. And the means of those who are looking for you is crystal clear. Then at the end, it says, اللَّهُمَّ فَاسْتَجِبْ دُعَائِي. Ya Allah, accept my supplication and my devotion. وَاجْمَعْ بَيْنِي وَبَيْنَ أَوْلِيَائِي. And bring me closer to those whom I love, the holy Ahlul Bayt, those whom I've displayed highest levels of loyalty and allegiance. بِحَقِّ مُحَمَّدٍ وَعَلِي وَفَاطِمَ وَالْحَسَنِ وَالْحُسَيْنِ. By the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, وَالْحَسَنِ وَالْحُسَيْنِ. إِنَّكَ وَلِيُّ نِعْمَائِي وَمُنْتَهَى مَنَائِي وَغَايَةُ رَجَائِي فِي مُنْقَلَبِي وَمَثْوَائِي. This particular supplication is truly wonderful and mesmerizing. And the visitor lives this feeling of remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, this feeling of beseeching Him, this feeling of servitude that Amir al-Mu'mineen wanted us to feel when he comes forward and says and speaks to Allah and he says to Him, إِلَهِ كَفَانِي فَخْرًا أَنْ أَكُونَ لَكَ عَبْدًا. Ya Allah, it is a matter of pride for me that I am your servant. وَكَفَانِي عَزًّا أَن تَكُونَ لِي رَبًّا. And it's a matter of dignity for me and strength that you are my Lord. أَنْتَ كَمَا أُحِبُّ فَاجْعَلْنِي كَمَا تُحِبُّ. You are exactly how I want you to be, so make me how you want me to be.
¶¶
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, good manner and incuriosity. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of good manner and incuriosity. In the Islamic lifestyle, when we look at the Islamic text, we see that the good manner does not mean to be or having the incuriosity in the matters of the life. When we see something which is bad in the society, the good manner does not say that when you see something bad happening, when you see some kind of injustice happening in the society, be quiet and deal with it in a good way or the kindness. Rather, Islam says that if there is something which is bad, obviously we have Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, calling towards the good and forbidding the bad deeds or forbidding the bad or evil. When we see the evil in there, the good manner is to deal with the harshness. It is to not to deal with the smile. When we see an evil in the society, the good manner does not teaches us to deal with the people with kindness, to deal with the people with a smile, to see the people with a smile. For example, if there are people who purposefully, we see that in the month of Ramadan, being a Muslim, they do not fast purposefully. They break their fast in front of others. Then it is not a place to smile upon them, to give them a smile. Because when you give a smile to such a person, he gets the courage of doing that evil again and again. But if we look them harshly, if we look them in a way so that they feel guilty, they will never again repeat the same thing in the month of Ramadan. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the good manner and incuriosity. In the Islamic teachings, we said that it is not the part of good manner that someone performs an evil. We should deal with the person, we should face a person with kindness, with the smile. And the example which we gave was the example when in the month of Ramadan, when there is the fasting is an obligatory upon everyone, and we see someone purposefully break his fast during the day, and with no reason he eats in front of other people who are fasting. Now there, if we smile on such a person, obviously this is something which encourages him to perform that evil again and again. Therefore, we need to see him in a way so that he feels guilty. And this is what husne khulq means. In the good manner does not mean having incuriosity. Good manner means that when there is an evil, you should stop evil. When there is a good thing, you need to smile. If you're calling someone towards the right path, yes, you need to call them with a kindness. You need to call them with a smile, with kindness. You need to talk them softly so that they come towards you because you are preaching something. But on the other hand, if there is an evil, if there is a crime happening, it does not mean to show incuriosity to that crime or to that evil. And this is what husne khulq or the good manner means in the Islamic lifestyle. So in the Islamic lifestyle, when we talk about the good manner, we need to consider all these points in our minds and then having a good manner in the society, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
BlackRock is one of the world's biggest corporate drivers of climate chaos and ecocide. Stay with us for an article in this regard written jointly by Yusra Bitar and Ali Shah, writers. This article is published under the heading War Profiteering, Ecocide and Policing, BlackRock Vies for Corporate Hall of Shame. Stay tuned for more. BlackRock, the world's biggest asset management firm, has been nominated for the 2022 Corporate Hall of Shame at Corporate Accountability. BlackRock has nearly $10 trillion in assets under management. That's more than the GDP of every country in the world except for the United States and China. BlackRock is a top shareholder across a wide range of global industries that include oil and gas, technology, retail, big banks, healthcare, weapons manufacturing, and much more. And this makes BlackRock one of the most powerful corporate actors on the planet, whose influence touches every aspect of daily lives. BlackRock's founder, chairman, and CEO Larry Fink has attempted to brand the firm as sensitive to global challenges like climate change, structural racism, and public health. However, BlackRock's investment activity and governance practices drive business operations that directly harm Black and Indigenous communities and people of color around the world. The firm props up the fossil fuel industry to the tune of $260 billion in investments in corporations that are propelling climate catastrophe. It has nearly $6 billion invested in civilian gun manufacturers and retailers and an astounding $36 billion invested in military's weapons companies. Larry Fink has been a major donor to the New York City Police Foundation, which supplies equipment and surveillance technology to New York Police Department that has targeted Black and brown communities in New York for decades. For all these reasons and more, BlackRock has been nominated to join Corporate Accountability's Corporate Hall of Shame, and we believe it is an extremely strong candidate for entry. BlackRock is one of the world's biggest corporate drivers of climate chaos and ecocide. Not only is it a major culprit behind the global climate breakdown because of its huge fossil fuel investments, but its wishy-washy climate promises and support for false climate solutions fail to address the root causes of the climate crisis. To start, BlackRock oversees one of the world's biggest fossil fuel portfolios. It is a top owner of the world's most powerful and most polluting oil and gas corporations, from ExxonMobil to Chevron and from ConocoPhillips to Marathon Petroleum. It recently led a consortium of investors that plowed $15.5 billion into Aramco, Saudi Arabia's state-owned oil and gas company and one of the world's dirtiest fossil fuel companies. BlackRock also remains one of the world's biggest investors in the coal industry. While insurance and investment for the coal industry is shrinking, BlackRock has recently plunged more than $34 billion into companies developing new coal assets. BlackRock remains the single largest institutional investor in coal, with around $109 billion invested in the industry. This includes the $1.2 billion BlackRock invested in Adani Group's dirty coal mine project in Australia, which over 100 companies have ruled out investing in due to public pressure. Not BlackRock, though. Simply put, there are few corporate actors that are more heavily invested and have more of an ownership share in fossil fuels and extractive industries like BlackRock. This also means that BlackRock has more power than almost anyone when it comes to holding these industries to account for the damage they cause. But does BlackRock use this power for good? Not even close. While BlackRock is financing the fossil fuel industry whose operations are harming frontline communities around the world, CEO Larry Fink has also been supporting the police as they target protesters and BIPOC communities in BlackRock's home city of New York. Larry Fink served as the co-chair of New York City Police Foundation's annual gala for 4 years beginning in 2016, and he was honored by the foundation in 2015. Fink has also donated to the NYC Police Foundation, which has given millions to the New York Police Department, NYPD, for more surveillance equipment, mounted police horses, and policing gear. In 2020, the NYPD used excessive force to crack down on racial justice protesters after George Floyd was murdered by police in Minneapolis. In fact, the state of New York filed a lawsuit against the NYPD over their handling of the protest. In 2020, of course, the suit claims that the New York City Police Department exhibited a pattern of using excessive force and making false arrests against New Yorkers during peaceful protests. BlackRock's support of police power in the United States extends far beyond just as New York City. As Code Pink has reported, BlackRock is the largest shareholder in Axon, a nationwide supplier of tasers, body cameras, and surveillance software to police departments around the U.S. BlackRock holds 10.4% of Axon's stock, which currently amounts to over $600 million invested in the company. In addition to being the largest shareholder, former chief investment officer at BlackRock, Matthew McBrady, has served on the board of Axon since 2016. Axon has contracts with the police departments in most major cities in the United States. The company's flagship products are a series of tasers that are sold to civilians, police, and the military. The company claims that the weapon is a safer alternative than guns for police to use in the field. However, a 2019 Reuters report documented a total of at least 1,081 U.S. deaths following use of tasers in the U.S. since they became widely popular with police departments in early 2000s. Another report from USA Today found that 4 of 5 cases that ended in death that involved tasers began as calls for nonviolent incidents, and 84% were unarmed. In the cases where the race of the victim was reported, the majority were Black or Latino. Nevertheless, the NYPD stockpiled brand new X26P tasers from Axon in 2020. The Los Angeles Police Department followed suit in 2021 by purchasing 5,260 Taser 7 energy weapons from Axon, making the LAPD the force with the largest energy weapon deployment in the U.S. Since 2018, the company has also entered into agreements to supply hundreds of tasers to major cities including Chicago, San Jose, Tucson, St. Louis, and Pittsburgh. BlackRock has directly benefited from Axon's 220% growth in the last 5 years. BlackRock is also the largest investor in gun manufacturer Smith & Wesson, with an 8.3% stake in the company. Smith & Wesson guns or ammunition are used in the police departments in New York City, Los Angeles, Houston, Detroit, and Chicago. The company also makes assault weapons and restraints marketed and sold to police departments. In addition to profiting off of bloated police budgets, BlackRock also props up many companies whose products are tied to gun violence in the United States and endless war and occupation of places like in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Palestine. BlackRock is a top investor in many gun and weapons manufacturers that sell weapons designed to kill people as efficiently as possible, with consequences that are hard to ignore. BlackRock's investments in weapons manufacturers also equip and profit from war machines across the world that create massive refugee crises. In yet another attempt to distance itself from the harm tied to its business operations, BlackRock just announced a new partnership with the International Rescue Committee, IRC, to help refugees displaced by war in Afghanistan. However, as Code Pink reports, BlackRock maintains sizable investments in some of the largest weapons manufacturers in the world, who are directly profiting from arms sales tied to many of the wars that are creating refugee crises. BlackRock has tens of billions invested in the top military contractors in the United States. It is a top beneficial owner of Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman, and Raytheon. BlackRock executives and governors also have interlocking roles with these defense manufacturers. For example, Boeing director Stace D. Harris is also a director of BlackRock's fixed income mutual funds. BlackRock also owns hundreds of millions of dollars worth of shares in a range of smaller gun and weapons manufacturers. A few examples include Vista Outdoors, which sells ammunition, primers, and powder directly to consumers in addition to law enforcement and the military. BlackRock is a 15.26% owner of Vista, $307.7 million at stake at the time of the most recent filing. Olin Corporation, a manufacturer of ammunition and chemical products that also owns Winchester Ammunition, the largest military. BlackRock owns 10.4% of Olin and $825.8 million at stake at the time of the most recent filing. Ammo Inc., which supplies ammunition to the U.S. military and the police and is a leading manufacturer of armor-piercing bullets. BlackRock owns 11.26% of Ammo, $27.4 million stake at the time of the most recent filing. National Presto Industries, which owns AMTEC, the largest volume producer of 40mm grenade ammunition and fuzzing in the world, along with several other explosives manufacturers. BlackRock owns 12.52% of National Presto, a $67.9 million stake at the time of the most recent filing. BlackRock is also a top owner of major gun and ammunition retailers like Big Five Sporting Goods and Sportsman Warehouse Holdings. As the world's top asset manager, BlackRock is a majority investor in almost every major publicly traded company. It profits from those companies' operations and, as a major shareholder, bears significant responsibility for their governance and the impacts of their operations across the world.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A major benefit brought by Imam Khomeini was familiarizing people with the concept of resistance. This is the part of the speech delivered on June 4th, 2022 by Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. On the 33rd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini, greetings be upon him. Officials should have both piety and purity, and expertise and competence. Commitment to Islamic values as well as expertise. These are dualisms that some people tried to set against one another before or in the beginning of the revolution, but Imam harmonized and brought them together. These are the characteristics of Imam's school of thought. Well, you may ask a question here, asking to what extent Imam's school was realized in his own time or will be realized in the future. This is an important question that others may also pose to us. I'd say, based on reliable information and a study about the realities of the country, that we have made good achievements in all these areas. If someone denies these achievements, they are definitely being unfair.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد
The world of Islam has one single prescription today and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We have had many accomplishments in all these areas, including democracy, scientific achievements, diplomatic issues, the status of the country in the world, the economy and public services. Of course, we have also had our share of failures. We have had both achievements and failures and weaknesses. Here too, Imam was provided intelligent guidance for us. Imam's guidance is of huge help to us. In the last year of his life, he said something to the children of martyrs. He said, "Your performance sheet depends on your effort and diligence. The more you work and try, the more results you will achieve." Imam continued, "Living in today's world is living in the school of willpower. Life depends on willpower. Whenever the nation and officials enter the field with firm willpower, they will succeed. And whenever willpower becomes shaky and efforts decrease, there will be backwardness." Yes, we have had some failures and some achievements. This is a matter related to us. We officials and the masses of people in society were involved in all matters. In certain cases, we acted well and made achievements, and in certain cases, we showed negligence and laziness and weakness, and we naturally fell behind.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Tehran has organized the fourth edition of its International Conference on American Human Rights. The conference was attended by Iranian officials, experts, and the youth from over 50 countries. The event was held on the occasion of the American Human Rights Week in Iran. It reviewed the human rights situation worldwide and its challenges as a result of the United States' double standard policies. Addressing the event, Secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Qari Babadi, said the U.S. is in no position to talk about human rights, given its widespread violations.
One can confidently claim that there is no nation in today's world that has not tasted the bitter taste of the American version of human rights. The U.S. administration should be held responsible to the oppressed peoples who have lost their lives as a result of terrorism, sanctions, aggression, and occupation.
The Iranian officials and experts believe that the gravest violation that can be committed against human rights is to politicize the issue, and this is exactly what the U.S. has done. A senior Iranian diplomat says human rights are turned into a pretext and a tool for the expansion and institutionalization of the predominance of American unilateralism.
Today, human rights are turned into a pretext and a tool for expansion and institutionalization of the predominance of American unilateralism. Sanctions and terrorism are the main pillars of the American version of human rights. If they are robbed of these two pillars, they may not be able to continue their dominance and plots.
Analysts believe that the unilateral U.S. sanctions are a means of collective punishment of all people, without any exception.
Here in Iran, people believe that the title American Human Rights Week seeks to condemn Washington's double standard policies with regard to human rights and reveal this very reality to the world. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Protesters blocking lanes and taking part in slowdowns on busy roads across the UK.
Give us our country back!
Organized on social media by Fuel Price Stand Against Tax, they're demanding deeper cuts in fuel duty. Chancellor Rishi Sunak announced a 5 pence cut in March, but that has not meant much at the forecourts.
Fuel prices in the UK have hit record highs since the beginning of the year. Only a few months ago, it would have cost roughly $90 to fill up, let's say, a 50-liter tank. But now it'll cost $30 more to fill up that same tank.
And that has put the squeeze on the finances of people. Some have had to quit their jobs because they couldn't afford the commute anymore. Businesses, too, are feeling the pinch at the pump and are passing the extra costs onto the consumers, worsening the cost of living crisis.
Worst of all, the poorest are suffering the most. You can't just switch off your power, you can't switch off your car, you can't switch off your central heating. And when winter comes, people will freeze. All of that, a direct consequence of this government's failure to have a joined-up energy policy, and we are literally paying the consequences.
Among the biggest factors contributing to the fuel price hikes, the UK's green energy policy and Western sanctions on Russian energy exports in the wake of the Ukraine war. Sanctions that the UK government was among the first to impose.
The sanctions imposed upon Russia for political reasons have clearly pushed up the energy costs. But secondly, and even more importantly, Britain has an idiotic environmental policy where they import the very fossil fuels that they depend on, even though under our feet there are £1 trillion worth of gas, and in the North Sea there are billions of pounds worth of oil.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson has hinted at a rise in UK oil and gas output, but critics say it would have little effect on consumer bills. And as long as the UK, along with its Western allies, fans the flames of the war in Ukraine, scenes like this may well become more frequent. Saeed Purizza, London.
Thousands of Iranian pilgrims have arrived in the holy city of Mecca for the Hajj pilgrimage. This once-in-a-lifetime journey requires spiritual as well as physical preparation. It's an arduous trip, and pilgrims usually start exercising prior to traveling to Mecca to enhance their fitness levels. However, what if pilgrims got sick or had an injury? To make sure Iranian pilgrims will receive proper and quick medical services during their Hajj pilgrimage, the Islamic Republic's Red Crescent Society has taken special measures. First, all Iranian pilgrims have checkups in the country to make sure they are healthy and in good physical condition. After receiving medical approval to travel to Saudi Arabia, each Hajj caravan is accompanied by a doctor.
Our goal is to bring back all Iranian pilgrims to our country in perfect health. We assure our pilgrims that during their journey, a medical team accompanies them, and in case of any problems, they will receive the required services.
Doctors accompany pilgrims in their hotels and provide outpatient services for them.
Three medical clinics operate 24/7. In addition, a well-equipped hospital in the city of Mecca is currently providing specialized services to Iranian pilgrims.
While so far there have been no cases of serious illnesses or injuries, Iranian doctors ask pilgrims to look after their health.
Older persons or those with underlying diseases should avoid going out in the hottest part of the day and rather go out at times when outdoor air temperatures are cooler.
Pilgrims should also be cautious about getting infectious diseases and wear masks in gatherings and crowded places. Iran's medical team sent to Saudi Arabia has carried the title of the best team for several years, and the key to their success is the devotion and love of the medical staff.
God has blessed us with the opportunity to be here with a group of our friends. We enjoy the spiritual environment of Hajj and serve the pilgrims of Kaaba.
Serving the pilgrims of Kaaba is one of the biggest blessings that has been bestowed upon me in my life. It has been one of my biggest dreams. I hope to be a good servant for Hajj pilgrims.
Providing different services for Iranian Hajj pilgrims is not only a duty, but rather an honor. Mahdi Abbasian, Mecca.
Highlighting the United States' rights violations at the former U.S. Embassy in Tehran, which the Islamic Republic calls the Den of Espionage. Every year in late June and early July, Iranian activists get together to commemorate the American Human Rights Week to recount instances of U.S. rights abuses in Iran.
United States, who is, you know, shouting the human right, we think that this is just a, you know, slogan without any background. And because when it's go to the Iranian people, we think we have seen that these people have been targeted, and we do not receive any apology about that.
The week-long occasion marks a series of tragic incidents, all falling within the same time frame, killing hundreds of Iranians in the early years after the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Rights activists say in all of those instances, the footprints of the U.S. can be traced. One of the most tragic incidents was the 1988 shooting down of an Iranian airliner by the U.S. Navy, which killed all of the 290 people on board the doomed plane. More than three decades on, and Iran is still waiting for an apology from Washington. Rights activists believe the U.S. has not abandoned its double standards regarding human rights.
We know that more than 30 countries have received the negative sanctions from the United States. Sanction is something that violates the human rights, the right of the development, right of the education, right of the health.
The American Human Rights Week also marks the 1981 bombing of the headquarters of Iran's Islamic Republic Party, carried out by the formidable Mujahideen-e-Khalq terrorist organization, known as the MKO. 73 leading officials, including the then Justice Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Beheshti, were killed in the blast. The Islamic Republic says the MKO is responsible for killing 12,000 Iranians in different terror attacks. In 2012, the U.S. and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist entity, and since then, they have been taking part in the terror group's annual summits in Paris.
They have withdrawn the MKO from the blacklist, and this withdrawal paved the way for the Americans, not only for the Americans, but also for the MKO, to extend their own terrorist operations through the facilities that they are provided from the Americans and also from the European territories.
The 1987 chemical bombardment of Iran's city of Sardasht is another incident that falls on the same period in the Iranian calendar. Iraq's chemical weapons were reportedly produced using materials supplied by the U.S. and other Western countries.
Activists here say Washington has shrugged off its crimes in Iran, and that's why they observe the American Human Rights Week every year to take a jab at the U.S. for its selective approach toward human rights. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Alina Lip, a German journalist who has been reporting from the pro-Russian Donbass region of Ukraine for over 6 months. She recently received charges from the German legal system threatening her with 3 years in jail.
On 24th of February, I shared on my Telegram channel the news that Ukraine is killing civilians already for 8 years. And I also said that this is a genocide and that people here in Donbass support the special operation of Russia. And this is a criminal act for Germany.
But Ukraine has been killing civilians here for 8 years. That's just
controversial. That's a fact. That's a fact. I'm filming here for half a year now, and I'm living in Donetsk, and I'm hearing all the day this shelling around me, and this is not Russia.
And the other one, it says there is that you said that most people here support the separatists. That's a fact as well.
That's a fact, yeah, of course.
A few days after Alina's charge sheet was issued, the main German TV channel ARD ran a story reporting that the Russian army was bombing Donetsk, but then it was the Ukrainian army. The next day, the channel published a retraction and apology. It's not clear how many people who saw the report also saw the retraction.
The courts have also taken €1,600.